going to sound a whole lot better. I'm sorry. Hi, Quasi and the Fanticles Internet. This is Jay Neverell and Lisa.
Hi.
Gorgeous, sexy, and wonderful. And, it's going back to Godsend. Actually, I'm not going to call it Godsend, but it's just become convenient to make that the working title. It's always been the working title for a long, long time, so we're just going to stick with it. And, I've had to make some changes, or I'm feeling like I need to make some changes to make it work better. You know? Going along, well, here, let me explain to Lisa what my whole idea is that I'm going to, I was talking to her a little bit about Lonely Girl 15. You remember me telling you about Lonely Girl 15?
No.
No, I didn't tell you about Lonely Girl 15?
If you did, I don't remember.
Oh, no. This is, maybe it was Shayna. This is a new paradigm in entertainment, sort of. You know, when, like, radio came out, a lot of things had to change to accommodate the new medium. Yeah? People who are used to doing, like, vaudeville acts and stuff like that, only some of those people could go into radio because you couldn't see them, right? So you had to be much more of an auditory type of thing. You know, you had to be a comic that was funny without people seeing your face or seeing your gestures. If you're a real physical person,
well, that was also
you had to stick with
that. That was also for the silent movie people, because all of a sudden you had to hear their voices, and some of them just didn't have
voices.
They were
right. And silent film was scary for the simple reason that it only lasted about 10, 15, 20 years before it was gone. And if you didn't have the voice, you didn't have the stuff for talking. So so we have this whole thing, right? We've got this internet thing, and we've been struggling and struggling and struggling trying to figure out just where does the internet fit into the whole thing. Music companies are absolutely nuts, angry about the internet because it's so much easier now to
download the music.
Yeah, just download the music instead of going to a record store and buying it, which has always kind of been their way of doing things. So they're having to adjust and change or try to come up with some other way of doing it. And it's kind of difficult for them. But you've got these new things like YouTube. YouTube is where it's like, people just put up little snippets of video. You know, these aren't long things. These are definitely not movie-length things because nobody wants to sit in front of their computer with headphones on watching and listening to something for 2 hours. It's just not pleasant. So these things tend to be really short, so they're real snappy. Most of them are only about 2 or 3 minutes long at the most. Plus, doing the uploading and the downloading of it is really kind of, you know, and storage is bad. Yeah, a lot of these red things, they look like ambulances. Yes.
Just
as
the sign.
They're red. It's almost like they're more of a fire engine than a ambulance.
No, but they're too strange shapes.
They're really wide, which is weird.
Yeah, which sounds more like an ambulance.
Yeah, wide. Okay. Well, there you go. Here we go talking about what's on the road with us. As usual, because we're driving to Albuquerque today.
Yay!
To go spend some fun time together.
And some fun hands for people.
It seems to be the thrust of what tonight's going to be.
Very good.
Doing favors for folks. So anyway, okay, so all of a sudden all this new stuff's coming up, and it's much more smaller and choppier, and it's mostly done. It's a little more, a little less polished of productions, you know? Well, this guy came up with this idea. He always wanted to get into television or film. He always wanted to do those kind of things. And since he was a kid, And he was stuck in a dead-end job. He didn't like it. And he had a friend who was also stuck in a dead-end job. And guess what the dead-end job his friend had? A plastic surgeon. He says, I make money. He says, yeah, I have money hand over fist. That's boring. He says, you're not allowed to be very creative. You know why? You do creative stuff, somebody's going to die, they're going to sue you. That's the problem with being creative in medicine. You can't do it. So anyway, they got together, and they came up with this whole concept of these little short snippet things. People pass, you know, people put these things on YouTube, and if they're popular, they listen to it. It's kind of like these social websites, too. So you would have this kind of thing. And the whole thing they were going to do is they're just going to be made up. It was going to be about this really cute, beautiful girl that was lonely, and they came up with this whole thing. She had been homeschooled, and she felt trapped by her parents because her parents were making her do all this. She didn't like them. And so first they just started out, and they got this girl, they signed her under contract, and she had to tell people that, you know, she had to wear sunglasses when she went out, so people didn't know her. She wasn't allowed to get a job, so they started paying her. And, you know, and she was this person, this lonely girl of 15, on YouTube, and I guess she had maybe a MySpace thing. Or, well, she didn't have the website, because she had a MySpace thing. Anyway, so they went along for a little while, not too long, before somebody said, hey, man, this is a bunch of crap. This is a lie. And, but then they found out that people didn't care that it was a lie. Because those guys wrote scripts for it. She actually read scripts. You know, it was kind of like television. It was kind of like reality television. Most people were used to the fact that most reality television is made up, right? These are unnatural circumstances, and a lot of the crap in there is scripted. So it was okay. And they said what was neat about it was it wasn't like television, because what you start doing is you start getting feedback from people. You know, people will make comments. They'll, like, get on a message board, and they'll talk to her. And the girl who was the actress wasn't the person talking back to you. She wasn't the text version of Lonely Girl 15. It was actually one of these founding creator guys' wives. They did it, and they said it's a little tricky to try to channel 16-year-old girl. No, at first it was one of the guys. He did it. And they were saying, this is getting, too much. Number two, he said, I don't think I can pull off a very convincing 16-year-old girl. So he got his wife to do it. His wife's a lawyer. And now she doesn't do lawyer work because she makes more money doing this. Really funny. And they just keep going on. And she just, you know, people talk about their lives. And from the feedback they were getting, that would be incorporated into these scripts they would do. It was just like, and they said, so it's a lot more interactive than a television show is. A television show can't be interactive. It can't do it. You know, because there's just no real facility for it.
Right.
You know? People are just supposed to get on message boards and talk about what may happen, but it never really affects the show. The show's already figured out months and months and months in advance. This thing just kind of flows, you know. They'll get all the stuff that comes in, they'll say, well, that would be interesting, you know. So they went off, and she started doing some really weird things. And so people kept watching because they just wanted to see, well, what's she doing? Yeah. They started this in this little apartment that this one guy lived in. They went down to Target, and they bought the kind of stuff they thought a 16-year-old girl would have in her room that wouldn't cost too much. It was his bedroom. He has a studio apartment. And so they have all this thing set up. They have the webcam there that she talks to, and she gets up, and she dances, and she sings, and she's cute, you know. She's a cute, skinny, aspiring actress. Now, the actual character isn't aspiring actress, the one who plays her. So, you know. And this whole thing kind of happened, and these guys are trying to say, then they try to go and they try to sell it to a production company or something like that. They're trying to find advertisers, somebody, anybody who wants to pay for this or make this into a money-making venture. And the problem is it's so new and it's so different that even though it's really popular, people are going, we've got to figure out how we can capitalize on this. So I said, you know what? Godsend needs to be done like a freaking vlog. It really does. Or like these recordings I do. You know? I've got recordings all about God. I've basically told the story 2-3 times, along with some changes. So now here I am, another recording.
Making another change.
Making another change.
Uh-huh.
Because honestly, I really want it to be more believable. You know? For the longest time, I've had I pretty much focused on first home, the island, and the convocation, and that somehow the convocation is able to manipulate everybody so everybody stays in the system. And every time I thought about that, I said, that's not possible. There's people that just won't do it. They just refuse to fit in.
There's always that rebellious.
There's always the rebellious streak. You can work on that a lot. That's kind of like what public schooling is. You can work on it a ton, and you can find a way that a majority of people will be vaguely unhappy about the whole circumstance, but they'll still stay there, right? But you're always going to have people that just buck that system.
Yeah.
And you have to have something to do with them. Usually, you make their life miserable until they go away. And so in trying to figure out how I can solve that problem, I had, I figured that they would just be cast off, disappear. And I had originally come up with Melisenda being a person that takes these kinds of people and takes them to this place where the convocation really doesn't have any influence, and that these were free people. Well, then I had this character who had come back, and there needed to all of a sudden start being some conflict there somehow. I didn't really want it to be between Melisenda, who was bucking the system just slightly, but trying to be hidden about it, and the system itself. I didn't want to get that far yet, because then you can instantly start saying, oh, well, but okay, the convocation's evil. I wanted the evilness of the convocation to kind of start just peeking through until it's just really obvious. But that, at first, it really kind of sounds like, oh, wouldn't that be a wonderful world? And then I want that world to be just really, ugh. At least for this first book, I want the first book to kind of behave like that. So I was struggling with it. So, and every time I struggle with something, that means, well, the book's going to get a lot thicker. It's going to get, and we're going to have to do a whole lot more.
It doesn't matter if it's thicker.
It doesn't matter. Yes, I want people to really get into this. So then I came up with, now the land called Trecheva has always been there. It was Trecheva is where Saradio, depending on who you talk to, whether she was exiled there or if she just escaped there. Depends on which side of the argument you're on as to whether, you know, she lost some battle and went there to go lick her wounds, or if she actually went there purposefully to rebuild and come back and slaughter people or whatever she ends up doing. You know, it all depends on how you look at it, really.
Yep.
Okay. So we always had Trecheva down there, and Trecheva's always something that was a little off from first home, it was still the same people, but it was, you know, first home was always supposed to be the nice place where everything was orderly, and Tretyevo was a little bit wild and crazy for people who tend to be kind of that way. Everybody needs that kind of a place. So anyway, I went back to the old Tretyevo idea. Tretyevo had kind of dropped off the radar screen of the part of the story I was working on because it didn't seem to have any purposefulness there. If I was ever going to get back to writing about the very first part of the Aled, that's how, you know, that's when you hear about Tretyevo. But now I decided to bring it back in because I really needed a place where the convocation really didn't hold much sway. And in thinking of it in power terms, I think it's important to have those kind of places, but nobody within the blessed realm knows they exist. It's very important to keep up appearances. So you have this whole kind of ball where everything's beautiful, everything's wonderful, everything's orderly and nice. That's where the queen is. That's kind of what the queen rules over. And she, although she knows that there's other places besides where she is, that's not her concern. And she doesn't worry about it. We had been working on the character of Samantha for a while. She is somewhat new compared to some, kind of being the queen's nemesis. But it was always kind of tricky because of the way the convocation is. It's very girl-like, you know. There are cat fights, but, you know, she was always within the queen's circle because the queen wanted to keep her most powerful and problematic enemy within sight of her, you know, so she could keep tabs on her. Well, I decided to kind of go away from that. But I always looked at my model for how the convocation was as kind of middle school to high school aged girls and the kind of weird, twisted social stuff that they get into. So I kept with that, or I tried to. But now I don't know if I'm kind of starting to wander off of that because these are adult women. These aren't immature.
Well, yeah, but you do have groups of girls that are in training so that when they do graduate,
quote unquote, they become ladies,
and then that's when you have your actual adults doing this stuff.
Okay. That's true. So, yes, I've been working on how I would do stuff. So I have first home, which is the perfect little happy feminist bubble, you know. But to support that world, it's almost like having a biosphere. You know, that place in Arizona where they have all the glass and they tried to make it totally self-contained thing, which was silly for the simple reason that outside this biosphere and hooked up to it were all these power plants and generation things so it wouldn't get too hot because it was too freaking hot. So it really wasn't a closed system and it really wouldn't work. You know, there was a billion reasons why it just wasn't gonna happen. Anyway, so, that's also true of this. There's this kind of island, but there's some dark, dirty secrets that keep that island running the way it does. You know, you can think back to things like Logan's Run, where you're going, there's deep, dark secrets behind all this because this system really can't work this way. You know, there's got to be somebody doing the dirty work. The, you know, you try to make a utopia sort of a society, and it never works because there's unpleasant things that need to be done, and there's people that need to do it. And they may or may not enjoy their job, but that's not important, you know. You have to pay them more, stuff like that. That kind of destroys the whole utopian thing. So, Trencheva has become kind of the support system to keep the convocation going. It's like kind of a weird, dirty little secret, sort of, but not. Now, Trencheva is mostly controlled by Samantha, or at least parts of it are. It's kind of like, let's say the difference between the United States and Mexico.
Okay.
You can draw a definite line between the two places, but as you get close to the border, you start getting kind of an attitude. You know, it's almost like the closer you get to it, the more melded it is. You get more Mexican and American things in the same place, and then you finally cross over. There actually is a line, but there's like this buffer region on both sides where it's kind of like a little bit of both.
And how do you know?
To varying degrees.
Who's Mexican and who's American? Because sometimes the Americans look like the Mexicans.
That's right. And the Mexicans look like Americans. Especially with those crazy Mormon colonies. That's a funny place.
Yeah.
Like, what are all these Americans doing in Mexico? They go, oh, no, they're Mexicans. They aren't? Yeah. Born and raised here. Some of them never leave. You're kidding. Anyway. So, I was kind of pondering this whole kind of buffer region, and that's really what Samantha does. Trencheva really ends up being, or at least the southern parts of it, the parts that are furthest away, first home, are really kind of wild, crazy, no man's land, or at least they're portrayed that way, where the men are in charge, and they're mostly wild, crazy men, you know. These are the convocation's rejects. They don't want them, or those guys don't want the convocation, so they stay away from it, or the convocation throws them out there. Now, this buffer area is interesting. Samantha doesn't mind, well, I can't say she doesn't mind. For the longest time, she has been kind of a back office person, you know? She's extremely powerful, but she is, you know, she isn't out there like the Queen is. You know, the Queen is the public front, you know, beautiful, wonderful, fantastic. I can see Samantha being somebody that's not really beautiful. She doesn't give that personal thing that ekes out success. She is much more of a brutal, you know, nasty, just kind of, you know, every really nice person, you know, at one time or another for protection or for just survival, owns a Rottweiler. And that's what Samantha is. She's the Rottweiler of the whole thing. The only problem is, she gets tired of having to pander to the Queen and her little things. You know, I'm the Queen, you're going to do what I say. It's like, when she's far more capable of running things than the Queen is. In fact, if Samantha stopped doing what she does, the whole system would just fall apart. Because it just won't hold together. There's got to be something of a threat there, that's what she is. She really can't ever be queen, because a queen is supposed to be the model, the perfect woman. and she doesn't fit that model. But she wants to be the queen anyway.
Or
she wants to rule over the queen. You know, the queen's gonna needs to be under her thumb.
Power hungry.
She's power hungry, sure. Okay. So she kind of controls kind of this buffer territory between men gone wild and the wonderful civilized, you know, if only women ran the world, it would be a beautiful place. Type thing, right? We would never have wars again because women don't have wars. They go, no, they poison them. You know, they they'll stab you in the back. That's what women do. We just don't often give them a reason to want to do that. Okay, so. So we came up with this whole new thing here. And trying to make it work. And I finally said, well, maybe Melisenda and her family, I don't think breeders, which is what Melisenda's mom is, she's basically a child-producing machine. She's a lady, so she's supposed to be a lady-producing machine. Right? That's mostly her purpose, is to be a biological cog in the system that keeps this all running.
Right.
So, it didn't make a lot of sense to put her on first home. First home is supposed to be, you know, she probably isn't high class enough to merit first home, you know? The social structure of the convocation is still there where she is, but it really doesn't, you know, it really doesn't, you know, it isn't personal. This is kind of like, if you're living in the slums, people still do what they see on TV, but they're never going to get to live the lifestyle of the rich and famous. Although they'll try to buy up one or two things to help them feel like they're getting there, you know. I'm going to have a nice car with a little... I always find it funny. The people... I'm sorry. You know what? I don't like to say it's a Hispanic thing, but 3/4 of the people down there are Hispanic, so...
Right.
I'm not going to make a stereotype, but... You could almost say, and you could do a study and it would be true. So you guys, I guess it's a stereotype. The guys who have the hubcaps on their cars that spin around, and they keep spinning, absolutely gaudy, absolutely stupid and pointless. No rich person would behave like that, would they? Unless they were black gangbangers or Mexican mafia, right? They don't do that. It's made to try to make you look impressive for $9.95. You know? It's like, oh, God, it's sick. This is just stupid. So, you know, that's kind of what I... So that's the kind of environment where Melisenda grows up. Now, Melisenda and her older sister, Corin, which we've had as a character for a little while, we decided to introduce her because we needed somebody we just needed somebody who had a more personal relationship with Melisenda there at the beginning that we could capitalize on later, and we didn't do it. We kill off Ma. I had been working on the convocation being kind of a faceless organization like a corporation, but I've kind of come to think that women don't like that. A corporation's really a man thing. Men like faceless things, you know, so that nobody has to die when they do awful things. I don't think women are like that. I think women want to have relationships with other women. They really want that kind of interaction. So it's really important that instead of having...
I said I think you're right.
You think I'm right? Okay. Yeah. Women really value that. It's sad that our world doesn't give them more. I think that's why a lot of women are very dissatisfied. And I think that's where feminism came from, was from a basic dissatisfaction.
I think that's why I really liked Chip Carey when I first moved here, because all of a sudden I had two really great friends, and I've been without friends for like 7 years.
Another hookup?
Well, besides you, of course. You aren't a woman.
You're right.
That's different. And then within, you know, a year or two, one of them moved, the other one went wacko, and then she moved.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and so I've been without again.
Sorry.
You know? I mean...
And yet you still stay here.
Kate is sort of a friend, but...
It's okay. We don't go into personal things too much on this thing because somebody might hear.
That's
okay. So we're not going to do that.
She's got a really busy life and I've got a really busy life.
Sure.
And we're two different lives.
That's right. You're so different. And that's true. And I think that's just what happens over time. That's okay. But in relationship to the story, if women had things the way women wanted them, you would have
a
lot of interaction.
A woman needs another woman's friend.
That's right.
She just needs it.
A lot of coffee clash type of things. Well, you don't drink coffee. You know, you need that kind of a group that get together and it just needs to be a small group. It's not a huge bunch of people.
Yeah, that's why I enjoy doing the Study Enrichment activity, because it's usually just a small group. And we have a lot of fun.
Good. See, that's important. So that's why the convocation is set up how it is. You have a matron, you have her immediate little group of hangers on, like, suppose.
Yeah.
But it's still a very small group. This isn't a group larger than 5 or 6 at the most. And that's a really big group, and you really can't sustain that. You usually have that before you start breaking off into different groups, according to affinity and stuff like that, who likes hanging out with each other. And it tries to stay as organic as it can, because women are really much more organic, you know? That's why men are in the military. Militaries are fake. Nothing organic about that. That's why women don't do very well. We have to make accommodation for women if they're going to be in the military. Men, you don't have to make any accommodation for them at all. You say, sit up straight, and you do it. It's all about obedience and honor and stuff like that. And women, although they can be swayed by those things, they really need more of other things than something like a big faceless organization can't provide. I'm part of something bigger. Women aren't into being part of something bigger. They're part of having a nice, comfortable nest and having their little group of friends and, you know, being very comfortable. And so that's how the convocation does. Anyway, okay. So that's why we brought in Corinth. Just because we needed somebody with which Melisenda had felt some affinity for him, but we're going to find out that, you know, she's kind of two-faced, which that's a problem a lot of women, I think, face, is the fact that their friends turn on them when it becomes advantageous to do so.
Yeah.
Or your sisters, or family, or whatever, you know? This stuff can happen. Especially when there's somebody powerful manipulating things. And that's what Samantha loves to do. She is into ratcheting things. She loves watching women do what she wants them to do. You know, because that's what she wants. So that's how power is with her. I think that's how power is with, in the kind of a womanly thing, is being able to say, oh, I think you should do this, and all of a sudden everybody changes to conform to whatever your suggestion was. And you go, that's female power. It's being able to have an opinion, have everybody just adjust to your opinion. Woo! Power, power, power. Anyway, okay. Where on earth was I? I had just mentioned Corinth, and I wandered off to this stuff.
Yeah, I know.
Melisandre and Corin, they don't fit in with this kind of, you could call it middle class, I suppose. It's not really a middle class, but you could kind of look at it that way. Or maybe not. They're kind
upper
of low
middle.
Class.
Lower middle?
No. Their mother, in the scheme of the convocation, is low on the totem pole.
Low.
So they're an interesting group because, or at least, you know, Melisandre and Corner are interesting because...
That's interesting because I always pictured Melisandre's mother as being a lady who had other ladies under her, and even though she was...
She's a breeder.
Even though she was a fugitive, you changed it then. Well, see, that's why I considered her middle-upper class.
Oh, she is.
And then all of a sudden you're saying lower class.
Well, okay.
She's the bottom of the totem pole.
Now, okay.
What?
You really have to understand, there is the convocation of ladies, and I mean being a low-class lady is a billion times better than being like a common person.
Okay.
So you have to kind of understand, there's first home the island, all these, you know, they're the cream of the crop.
Right.
They're the best. Then as you make your way away from first home, mostly to the south. There really isn't much happening in the north, which is where Melisandre and Davor basically go, is to the north because there's practically nobody there. There's very few people at all in that area. Okay, so you're moving north. You go down to kind of the middle class ladies.
Okay.
And Samantha is the most powerful of that group, even though she, anyway. And then you kind of keep on going, and it goes down to the breeders and the women who do the fishing. The ones that do all the work that's just got to be done. It's not glamorous, you know. You really feel... there's a possibility that you could feel really used, but the society works really hard to try and always say that you're so important, you're so vital to everything that happens. You're the backbone of this. Even though those people would always say that they're lying through their teeth to you, because they're going, God, glad I'm not you. Your life must suck. But you know what? It's so important that you keep doing it, because if you don't do it, maybe they'll make me do it. I don't want to do it. And so you have those people, the breeders and the fisher chicks, you could call them. I guess those people don't know if you say that. You have to say something that sounds better. Of course, you also want to make it sound better, so you call the breeders the mothers. Even though almost all these women eventually will have a child, I have to say that, just like in any culture, the higher you get, the less children you tend to have. You only have one. Maybe two.
So you can have the
but typically
feeders,
you only have one.
You can have the fish girl. You can have the Lakers. You can have...
No, that's fine. I'm still trying to keep it simple because I think if I make this too complicated, it's just going to be too hard to hang on to. I have problems hanging on to. So, yeah, those people, which are basically your kind of your convocation working class, they really keep things kind of going. And then after that, you really have kind of the rabble, which isn't in part of the convocation, really. But they're mostly in this kind of no man's land, you know? Women get stolen from those kinds of places, and they're mostly used as tools of men. Men who figured out they've got testosterone, and that gives them power, and, you know, you can't just say, oh, well, in this culture there's no testosterone,
well,
so
know,
all the guys are kind of...
I'm trying to figure out how it changed anyway. Because all those men, I'm sure, had testosterone before the qualification ever came into effect. And it's like, how on earth did any of those guys be willing to...
To be like a man servant?
Yeah, instead of, hey, I'm the one who's wearing the pants. I will take care of things here. You know?
Hey. Well, what? Oh, how it happened in the first place?
Yeah.
Men got a bad reputation. Men got a bad reputation. And God even came in and said, okay, the person who's going to rule is Sarahdiel, a woman. And she and her daughters will be the queen. Will be queens, and they'll rule over you because the men have just gone so far the wrong way. And so that's what set this up. So it's always kind of a traditional thing. It's just become part of the whole culture. You know, you have to understand, men are just second class. Even God says so. Even though they don't really believe in God anymore, they'll tout it out if somebody starts to question.
And then you have somebody like Enos.
Huh? Well, Enos is totally different, but you know why? Because he hasn't been there.
Yes.
Both guys are totally outside the culture.
So
therefore, it doesn't affect
them. He's definitely got testosterone.
Yes. Well, there are many guys that do, and as part of this whole process that the convocation has, they get rid of those guys, people who don't conform. And, you know, I've been kind of sliding back and forth. You know, I have the lemony bars and the fatty cakes, and I've waffled back and forth about whether they put some kind of chemical, you know, basically to try to, you know, because the women don't eat that stuff. There's other things that the women eat besides this stuff, you know.
I'm sure there's got to be some herb
that just kind of, you know, kind of a Ritalin sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, that just says, you know, because it's, you know, honestly, school works best for girls. It's an environment that's much more congenial to girls except for the athletics part.
Yeah.
Guys go in for athletics, and if they don't make it in athletics, they're losers. And the only thing they can do is try to excel at academics, which is definitely a women's thing. Or, well, frankly, no. Just the school environment works best under women. Somewhat compliant, easy to be entreated into doing what's best for the whole group. Guys are really independent, and girls really don't tend to be very independent. They're much more interested, you know. If you're going for, you know, if you're wanting to do something that's kind of a socialistic thing, women love socialism because it just sounds and feels good to them, right? If we all just get together and work on this, and we all take care of each other, we'll be okay,
yeah.
Right? But you can't make men do that unless you, you know, try to suck all their testosterone out of them and give them things to beat their frustrations out. Whores, so you know, you throw out whores. But women love that stuff. Anyway, so that's why you have a very socialistic society here. This road run by women, the way women are. Anyway, okay, so, yes, I've been struggling with the whole thing about, do we need to kind of drug these guys? And I finally said, well, you know what? They already control food production, and they control that so that it's all nice and made into little cakes that are supposed to give you everything that you need, right? Isn't that how a good socialist would make life? I mean, can make everything nice and fair, so we'll all eat the same thing. We may flavor it differently on different days so you don't get bored. But, and we're going to make sure it has every single nutrient that you need to get you through the day. You know? And we make a special one for men because, hey, we make them work harder because they need a lot of physicality. You know, the women understand what the men need, so they have to make sure that they give them that, because if you make a kid sit, make a boy sit in a frilly shirt and play with girls, he's going to go nuts or kill people. or he's going to go gay on you, you know? And the women don't, I guess the women wouldn't mind if they went gay. It's not helpful, but I don't know, maybe they really don't care. That's sick, I don't want to go there. I'm always being careful that I don't go off into a weird place. But I do really, you know, when it comes down to discussions about gay, I think answering the gay tendency is partly having to do with the feminization of men. So you don't want to do that. And women really don't want them to do that, except that when they do behave that way, they become much more compliant, much more easy for women to control, because they can treat them just like women, right? I can put you right in the pecking order amongst all the hens. But it makes them completely worthless for what they really need men for, which is to do the manual labor, to handle the real work that must happen. You know, the crops have to be got, we have to make food, buildings have to be built, things have to be improved. That's what men do, so we keep them busy. And we use our natural feminine wiles to kind of keep them in line. So anyway, so I'm thinking that, yeah, they do apply a little bit of very general Ritalin. You know, they put a really low grade Ritalin in the food, just to take the edge off, you know?
Okay.
I think that's workable, you know? They might have, you know, there might be something different in the lemony bars that makes them a little more compliant, because that's actually used as kind of a training technique to try to do that, you know? It's kind of a reward system. You know, women tend to use carrots more than sticks. Guys use sticks. Women use carrots, typically. Not always, but usually. It's tendency. So, I remember studying in school. Well, see, this is funny because I don't talk about school very much, because I never thought school really taught me something that was useful. And I don't think this really came out too much, but it kind of piqued my interest because it was kind of twisted. Being proto-autistic means I have a real interest in kind of twisted subjects. They talked about the Boxer Revolution, which is odd. It happened in China. And they said it was mostly fueled by opium. There was actually a woman kind of empress, and she had these troops that would just die for her. They'd do anything for her. And what, I don't know if this is true, this is the rumor, and nobody, I don't know if there's anybody there who's done anything toward proving it or disproving it. But the rumor was that she kept them absolutely enslaved to her through opium, through through just the euphoric feeling they would give him. And these guys were like raving lunatics in battle. You couldn't kill them. I mean, you would slice them up into five pieces, and those five pieces would still come after you. That was just the way it was. It was like whatever drug or whatever thing they were on, they felt no pain. So you could, you know, you would hit somebody and they would probably fall back and they would want to try to get help for themselves. These guys would. They would fight until you had killed them.
I was reading some book.
You ever heard about
it? It wasn't about that. It was like the Vikings. And before they would go on their raids and stuff, they would all smoke this stuff and they would or drink something or something. And anyway, so by the time that they would actually go out to battle, it would be in their system, and they would just
absolutely
rage.
And so that's kind of what is kind of my model for what's used in, like, say, lemony bars or things like it. It's something that's used so that, you know, most of the guys, what they would get most of the time is low-grade stuff.
Yeah.
You know, not anything too weird at all. It just takes the edge off. Now, what they would use with these lemony bars would really need to be something that's really just horribly addictive and just makes you feel like amazing, you know. I'm trying to think, what kind of attitude do these women want if you're trying to, like, enslave some guy and trying to get him to just follow you around like a puppy dog and do whatever you asked him to do, which is really what they want the guys to do, without losing their ability to do stuff. And you go, well, you get them hooked on the stuff first, and then you make it really low grade, and then as a reward, you give them a hit, right?
Okay.
If you do something really, really nice, or you do something really interesting or difficult or really out of the ordinary in service to your lady, she would give you a little bit of lemony bar, right? And it's like euphoria. It's like, you know, people will fight and kill to have this stuff. You know, kind of like dogs who will do anything you ask them to do as long as you give them a treat, a little bit of affection, some food.
I've never seen that before.
That used to be the... You know, they do all kinds of funny things out here that you need to be careful of.
I need to be careful of that?
I don't know. I don't know what they do. It looks like they're trying to add on, but it also looks like it's just... No! That's actually a track that goes above it, so it must move things around in that yard before it goes into the thing. So it's... Yeah. You might not want to know what that is. It might be some related drug. Anyway, so I've kind of looked at that as being a possibility, and that this is something that's generally not known, but it's something that, of course, the Queen knows almost everything. Samantha definitely knows this kind of stuff. And a chosen group of people who actually put the main constituents together ultimately, or control that process, they'll know about it. But it's really important in the convocation, and in any system that's like the convocation, it's important that you break things up into really discrete pieces, you know? And nobody knows the full picture. You just know your piece. My job is to take a whole bunch of fish and render it down into this goo. And I give this goo to somebody else. I don't know what happens to the goo after I give it to them. But I give it to them, and their job is to handle the next step. And they don't talk to each other, you know. It's almost handled like on a syndicate thing. Your little group does the same thing you do, you know. We're all in charge of fishing, you know. Me and my sisters, me and my coffee clutch, my matron does fishing. Therefore, since I'm in her group, we all do fishing. We all do it as a collective. And all of our people are kind of our people, but I have mine that are loyal to me. And she has hers that are loyal to her. but we all do these things together. So that way, in just the whole thing of talking, you don't really know. The only thing you know is what you do. You know, I fish, we take the fish to this processor, and that's another matron, and they do that so that it's kind of built on kind of a pyramid scheme. Nobody knows what's going on except the very top. That's where the queen and Samantha sit. Although Samantha tries to, you know, control things by having secrets that the queen doesn't know. Yeah, because that's power. If there's something that you can do that the queen couldn't pull off, that's power. And you can hold that over her, or you can just take her place. And say, you know, you're a cute kid, you know, you're real sweet, kind, and nice, but you know what? Crush like a little fly, you know, do exactly what I tell you to do. Which I think is what Samantha's really going for. So, a lot of the grunt work happens in this kind of low-class female thing. The last part of the convocation before people are just kind of chattel, kind of bought, sold, traded type of thing, you know. And a breeder isn't very far above that at all. Breeder is definitely the very bottom job there is. That's what a woman does if she just can't do anything else. Well, she's got a uterus and a vagina. We'll put her to work with what she's got. And if she doesn't work out like that, we'll either kill her or we'll just conveniently, you know, she'll be on the wrong side of the line when one of those male rape gangs comes along and they'll snatch her up and they'll do whatever they want to with her. If she dies, she dies. She's pretty worthless to the congregation, right? And you don't get to, you know, and that's why you keep all those girls, you basically keep all the kids sequestered from the adults, is so that you can do that kind of culling and nobody gets weird about it, you know? You just don't ever see it.
You know, I'm not really
everybody's
crazy
productive.
About, I'm not really crazy about
what?
The male rape game.
They've got to do something.
Well, not a raid or something, but I don't know about raid and pillage, but I don't know about the raid.
Lisa!
Well, what?
Evil's gotta do what evil does, and you have to say it.
Have
you
to.
Can't. I mean, you can't
can
candy coat it.
Say something that alludes to it, but not come right out and say it.
Fine.
I'm sorry.
Fine. Go ahead.
It's just me, I guess. You know,
fine. Lisa, the first part of this book, I want to paint women as wonderful, marvelous, and isn't it great that they've gotten together and they have a culture all their own, because doesn't it look sweet? And when you see men, they're nasty, vicious, cruel, and evil. And I really want them to say, see, this is just what we always thought. Women are beautiful and perfect, and men are slimy jerks. And the only way men are any good at all is if they're domesticated. See, I really want the first view to really appeal, especially to feminists. I really do want it to. But then I want it to start finding cracks in it. Number one, there's plenty of good guys, and there's even good guys out in that bad area where it's no man's land. Are there kings over there? Yes, there are kings. There are leaders, there are tribal elders. There's all kinds of different social systems going on over there.
Right.
You know, because that's just the way people are. They tend to congregate and find things to do. You find a lot of real lecherous, nasty garbage toward the borders. You know? So, our first real scene is kind of a takeoff of how chapter one has been. I don't know if you looked much at chapter one. Okay. We had it to where, you know, I had Corin going out and learning about her new job.
Right.
Being kind of a suppler person.
She
supples men so that they can be put to use in service of the congregation, right? To a lady, it really is to the greater good, but since it's women, it's a very personal thing. You have a lady that you practically, you know, if you're smart, you fall on her feet, you practically worship her as you walk, because otherwise, you know, she won't necessarily treat you very well. That's what it really comes down to, is how you're treated for those men. Anyway, come back to a whole nother, it's kind of a variation on that, because I really needed to say that the convocation needs a constant supply of men. That isn't necessarily produced by the normal channels, you know. Samantha really is a selective breeding wacko, you know. And does the convocation mind? No. Is it a secret? Oh yeah, it's a secret that she keeps from the rest of the convocation, practically. You know, she actually runs the whole system where these kids come from, and does she want to keep up the facade that ladies are by nature superior to others because they only produce girls? But you go, but we have to constantly have a stream of men.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise the whole thing falls apart. We have to start putting women toward the gut work, and that's not very ladylike. Yeah? There has to be this constant stream of men. Well, there's two ways you can get men. You can get men that ladies have actually given birth to, although they're not supposed to, and that go through that kind of a system, that they get taken away as soon as they're born before anybody knows what their sex is, and they get told.
Good to form for boys?
Well, I suppose. Yeah.
And there's women in charge of the farm, of course.
Well, you have to be careful about that, because you don't want women to be in charge of that for the simple reason that word can get out. So what you do is you snatch all the kids, not just the ladies' kids, you take all the children. You know, even of the commoners, at least of the ones that you can grab. And that way you can say, well, you were the son of a common one, of course. You know. So you can still play that game, but you really do want to keep them way out. And, you know, these guys aren't into genetics yet. They're not that advanced. Samantha's experimenting on it in kind of a medieval way. That's what she's playing with, is trying to play with the genes in the limited way she has. You know, she can't do chemicals. Right. She's just doing it by saying, if I match up this girl, which has the right attributes, with this guy who is so mousy and came from a circumstance where it was all girls except for him, boy, we might yet be able to get it down to a point where we only have like five or six men. We have all these women. And so, okay, so you kind of see what they're going for, but you don't know that yet. That actually becomes a secret that gets revealed later on in the story. Anyway, you have to have a constant supply of men. So where do you get that from? You get that from the the southern part of Churchillville where men control things, right? Those guys breed, and they don't have any, you know, they don't really have a concept of this whole, well, we just want more men. You know, there's women down there, of course, because that's just the way it's going to be, and they're, they may even have a concept of marriage, I don't know. Probably not, because they really are kind of the complications refuse. It isn't going to be like there's real competition here. This is the sewer of the convocation. It's just that the convocation doesn't even bother setting up any ground rules down there. It's like anything goes. So I would imagine it's more like a free-for-all, you know. Guys are strong. They tend to dominate women because these women are really garbage, you know. These can be top-class men that just didn't fit in with the convocation system. But let me tell you, every single woman out there, unless she was born out there, is going to be an absolute reject. So, you know, they're already going to have self-esteem problems. You know, these girls are not anything to be venerated. So if they get treated badly by men, they can almost think that it's their fault. Or it was just, you know, this is their destiny, is to live out here in hell to be treated like this. So anyway, you have lots of men out there, right? And the convocation is constantly dumping more men into that system. You know? If a kid 5, 6, 7, 8 years old is already starting to show indications through experience that a kid like him isn't going to fit in and it's going to cause problems for the convocation, they'll just be cast out there. They'll just be thrown out there. And they'll wander around a bit, and they'll become part of a gang, or, you know, or get sheltered by somebody who is remotely nice, or something like, you know. There's all kinds of possibilities out there.
Or get at the wolves.
Right. Sure. Why not? We could have that too. So we have that. So when the convocation needs more men, and they wear out men fast, honestly, you know, they're basically labor tools, like animals. Animals don't last long, right? Because you treat them like animals. Wait. Speaking of that kind of stuff, you have kind of the huntress who has to go out on kind of raiding parties into this thing to secure more men, right? Because you have to replenish the supply. So, that's what Corin is being done. She doesn't go to a place like Lowtown and pick up, you know, just the refuse, because now, in First Home, there is no Lowtown. That's across the channel, a totally different place, where things are a little dirtier, a little grimier. But no, it was past that, too. These are kind of a secret organization. It's not horribly secret, but it's certainly not talked about. Nobody really talks about the fact that where do all these men come from? And if you start asking that question, you know, people will start giving us a look and say, well, they come from the common people. And they go, if they're good and they do what they're told, they get to become, you know, they get the privilege of working for a lady, you know, and all the great things that comes with that. So, they go out there. Now, you have to understand that in this buffer area is where the most nastiest of everything happens. You know, you can say Mexicans are horrible because they're slimy, nasty, they break laws, and you go, that's typically true of the Mexicans close to the border, you know, because they're mostly feeding off the slime of the United States, right?
Yeah.
Where you go deeper into Mexico and you don't have that. You have people who say, you know, you have Mexican doctors. Who ever heard of that? You know, and you're going, well, yeah, they have to have doctors. We figured they all snuck up here to the United States and stole our health care. And you go, that's just the border ones. They don't, you know, the people from the interior, they don't do that. Because it's just too far to go. You know, they have to have their own society down there that isn't just licking, you know, yapping under the table of Americans. They don't do that. But the guys who live in the buffer area, they do. So that's why I said, you know what? Yeah, are there rape gangs, stuff like that? Yeah, but they tend to hang out right there by the border, right? Okay. So, raiding party, right? Foreign, or foreign raiding party. You have some big, tough guys who get probably a higher portion of this drug so that they are absolutely freaking gosh darn, you know, down on their hands and knees, loyal to you. And they're like your dogs. They go out hunting down other guys. And you make forays into this area to go and get fresh meat, right? So I was thinking, how would you do this? You have to be
careful.
That's
low dog.
And that's what I came to.
Really?
That's what I came to. I said, would they have arrows? And I go, arrows could damage them. They don't want to damage me. I said, they just want them to be incapacitated until they can take them in. And they take them in, and they work on them a little bit. If they start taking to the stuff that's going on, and then great, they get integrated and they become, you know, slaves to the complication. Otherwise, you throw them back out there. You know, it's just like fishing. If they're too small or they're diseased or something wrong, you just throw them back, right? That's exactly what they do. So that's what Corin is. She, of course, you know, you have to run this thing right. You have your dogs that go flush them out. Wait. Go ahead. I'm going to go ahead and take Central, even though I'm smart and usually stay on the interstate.
Okay.
But I'm
going
to take Central.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
We
got to
look for that place in the place.
C address 32 something. 32 25. You know, that's really problematic. Which sector of the town is it in? Because there's a 32 this way and a 32 that way. I'm guessing it's this way. Most of the town is this way.
Then why are we going this way?
Huh? No, this side of, like, the equivalent of Main Street.
Okay.
This is Main Street. You know, you always have East Main and West Main, or West Main and East Main. Try to figure out if it's West or East on this. They should have said Central Avenue Northwest or Southeast. Otherwise, I'm just guessing. 13 to 11. We have 100 blocks to go.
Oh my gosh, okay.
I think it's pretty close to where we stay. So
okay.
It's not a bad deal. Okay, so anyway. Yes, Lisa, you're so smart. You just want to incapacitate this guy without even hurting him. So yeah, use blow darts. And you use not poisoned arrows, but definitely drug darts. And so the guys don't hunt her, hunt these guys, the women do. So it takes a special kind of woman that goes out and uses these blow darts, and she takes down men. Of course, hers are dressed so that she can tell if they're hers. So I don't know exactly what that entails. And I don't know if dresses are pink outfit so you can tell if they're not outsiders or whatever. It doesn't really matter. Just as long as they're distinctive so she doesn't take down her guys, because she uses them to drag them back to wherever her camp is, where she starts the process. And of course, she is a matron, so she has several women under her that actually do all of the real gut work of doing this. But she's in training, so she's actually with another matron who's got all of her women out there. And they go, you know. And so she's with a pretty decent-sized group of women who are out doing this. But she's being taught how to be a matron over this. This is kind of her first matron job when she gets out of school. You know, you have lower women that do part of the shuffling process on to get these guys done. Now the interesting thing that comes out in this is that there are all kinds of men who don't offer up any kind of resistance at all, because the situation they're coming from is depressing and sad. This guy is nuts. What's he doing? He's scaring everybody. This guy's hanging way back, saying, I'm not anywhere near this idiot. They keep gunning it as if they're wanting to get around him. He says, you can get around him. Nobody's stopping you. It's like he's trying to scare the guy in front of him going faster. Merker madman. Anyway, so, and there's this whole dialogue during this whole training thing with Corin about saying, you know, there are guys out there, they have their arms up, they will offer you absolutely no resistance whatsoever. She says, now, she goes, I don't care, I still take them down, because I don't know what they're going to do, because they could be part of a rape gang, you know, and he might just be the bait to get you to come and try to treat him nice. And she goes, don't treat these guys nice at all. She says, that's rule number one of dealing with men. See, Lee, the little... It isn't the little things that spinning. I thought those were spinners. Sorry. It looks like spinners. Because it's tacky. It looks stupid. It's too shiny. It's just dumb. That's okay. Sorry. I like much more than that. Anyway, okay, so, you know.
These are five numbers and we're looking for four.
Yes, I know, so we've got a long way to go. We've got to go through at least 100 blocks to get there.
Well, look, 9901.
There you go. See, we're getting there.
Okay.
We're going in the right direction, right?
Again.
It's not going to take very long. Okay, so... so you get the whole feel for this whole thing. And of course, it's very important that you make somebody like Corin, somebody new, feel good, and you try to always put this in the best possible light. We're doing the most wonderful thing that could be done for these guys. We're saving them from a horrible circumstance. And it's certainly propped up, this whole attitude, by the fact that there's a whole bunch of men that want to be caught because they're tired of conditions where they are, you know. Isn't it nice to have a steady job? Isn't it nice to always have food instead of scrambling around trying to find food? All these things. When you live close to the border, that's a dirty, nasty, evil no man's land. And yeah, if you hang out there very long, you want to get picked up by the women and you want to be really compliant. And the whole thing rotates around the fact that, you know, you have to be really careful of these guys that try to entrap you. So you can't be kind, particularly. And it's for their own good, you know, because we are going to make their lives so much nicer. Yeah, so she's always talking up the whole rhetoric of it, right? And you can tell that and you really want the reader to know that it's really not a bad thing. You know, you are giving them what seems to be a much better life, even though it's slavery. You go, wouldn't you rather be the slave of somebody who takes good care of you rather than being where you're starving and you're constantly in fear of getting knifed or killed? You know, and you go, sounds pretty good to me. And you go, yeah, sounds really good. So you're doing this whole thing, and that's what she's practicing on doing. She's practicing on being a matron over these kinds of things. Right now, she is a lower class matron over breeders, and she really wants to get a head up. So, you know, Samantha's giving her this chance with an eye to manipulating her later, because that's what Samantha does. She manipulates people, and that's pretty powerful, right? You can exercise a lot of control over somebody if they feel like they owe you.
Wow, too amazing.
That's a good price here. What can I get you? $78.11. So we're still doing okay. We just need to go further.
He said it was on the right hand side.
Depends which way to go. I guess he would. Five. It's on that side. Yeah. All right. Odd numbered stuff up there. It's nice how things are kind of, people try to make things kind of normal.
Easy.
Somewhat. Not always true, but by and large. Okay, so that's how the first thing changed. You know, first before we had Lowtown, we had these roaming gangs that the convocation allowed to exist because they were useful. But I said, you know what, that isn't steady and that isn't good, and it's not good to have on first home. You know, because what stops those guys from rising up and just smashing the snot out of us anytime they want to? And you go, I need to fix that. And that's where I fixed it, is to say, no. They get sent to a no man's land. And does this system work well for the convocation? It works fantastic for the convocation. Why? Because they can generate a whole bunch of guys that are chomping at the bit in the first place to get to someplace safe and warm and quiet. And you go, that's what the convocation is. So you use nature to soften these guys up and do three-quarters of your work for you. Then the whole suppling thing is almost kind of a joke, because these guys are saying, I'm going to do whatever you want me to do. You just tell me what you want me to do. You know, you do this, you do this, you do this. You got it. So I'll do whatever you say. And you'll call me this, and you'll refer to me this way, and you need to be a good slave. And you go, you know what? Is there food in it for me? And you go, yeah. And you go, I'll do whatever you want. You want me to bark like a dog? I'll bark like a dog for food. And you go, okay, you're a little twisted. That's all right. I can live with it. Veterans Integration Center. See all these places down here? That's why I'm kind of worried about my motel, because they'll turn into low-rent housing. That's what all these places are being turned into, is low-rent housing for indigents, vagrants, yada yada. And I'm afraid they've taken my motel and done the same thing. This one still appears to be here. You probably want to stay a little more upscale in the place where I used to be.
Just a little.
There it is, Desert Sands. Should we go ahead and get our room now in case we have a problem with it? At least I'll know we're having a problem. Because I think San Mateo is 5201. So it's only 20 more blocks down.
Yeah.
What's all this? This is interesting because this is all new. I thought they were going to make that into a Walgreens.
Me too.
It's in a Walgreens now. Now it looks like it's some kind of weird, weird international, let's all get together and sing Kumbaya. I see a peace symbol. I see a little flag that says PAX. So yeah, I'm kind of thinking this is kind of Kumbaya, my Lord. This is my place. This is where I stay. It doesn't look very busy, but it says open. I'm going to believe it. But yeah, look. It looks dead. Of course, it's early. It's
so we shouldn't have a problem getting away, right?
Shall we? Want to come in? Poland. Oh, they finally decided to do another restaurant here. Good.
Did you turn this thing off, or is it going to record? What? Did you turn this thing off, or is it going to record dead space there?
Oh, yeah, I'll just record dead air space then.
Okay.
Well, I'll record it now. in that what Corin's getting into is a noble, you know, a wonderful, noble thing.
Right.
And only later to find out that, of course it isn't as noble and wonderful
as you thought it was.
As it could have been. And that, Melisandre isn't a crazed radical. Is that dog pooping or anything? It sure looks awfully still. And
yep, I think it is. Mm-hmm.
It just
yep,
laid an egg right there.
And they let it. They just closed that, let that dog back in and closed the door.
Okay. You're right there, so you're nowhere close to the freaking dog. Okay. Try to elude? Stop! You want to get the equipment? Okay, yeah, we can go ahead and stop. We're going to Jake, our quasi-nefagable gentleman. I record this just to keep myself happy. And it's only an hour and 32 minutes?
Yeah.
Wow, that wasn't very long. Okay, have a great day. Bye!